Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Living Mythology, I am proud to bring you Mythic Gaming. I will start off the show by introducing you to Lords of Olympus, a diceless RPG by the RPG Pundit, which allows players to assume the role of powerful demigods with divine abilities. They're able to travel to diverse mythic realms, strange new worlds, and even other dimensions. The playing field is mind-bogglingly vast, and the adventure possibilities almost endless. The Olympians are third-generation powers who emerge from chaos, preceded by the Titans and Primordials, and what we call Greek mythology is our distorted remembrance of their presence and deeds in our world. After a comprehensive overview, three chapters are devoted to constructing characters, learning the basics of play, and defining game terms. Numerous examples are provided, as well as many game-enhancing elaborations. You progress through mortal, hero, and Olympian stages, then ascend to a superior level, which culminates in first class. The rules, which are an enhanced clone of the original Diceless system developed by Eric Widjic in the 1980s, are fairly straightforward and refreshingly different from what I'm used to. I'm looking forward to trying them out in a home game with my family in the very near future. The chapter on game mastering is helpful and covers many contingencies, including handling the death of an immortal character and what to do when your player finally reaches first class. The role of fate and magical artifacts are introduced, and then the multiverse itself. There are enough realms inspired by Greek mythology in this book to keep you busy for a very long time. Plus, you can add any game you've ever played, plan on playing, or can imagine gaming for a very far time to come. It'll keep you busy for a very long time, and we'll just leave it there. There's also a brief catalog with descriptions of mythic creatures and monsters, plus some really good tips on keeping your campaign truly Olympian in feel. And my favorite chapter is titled The Divine Family, which is remarkably thorough, impressively researched, and very well thought out. The family dynamics and culture of the Olympians is explained, and details for numerous members from each generation of the pantheon are provided. Included are their name, titles, and epithets, description, history, abilities and powers, personality, location, closest relation and allies, plus notes on having them as a parent. You may not agree with some of the categorizations, such as classing Eros as a primordial or Aphrodite as a titan, but such details are easily adjusted. Most also come with ability classes and some with information on their children, minions, or attendant beings. The chapter, and indeed the entire book, concludes with tips on using the gods, deity locations, and symbols. Beyond first-class abilities, a deity index, character sheets, and an ad for other cool games by Precious Intermedia. I've run countless adventures in Mythic Greece since the dawn of the hobby in the mid-70s. Each of the systems I experimented with contributed a new perspective and approach to our ongoing mythic adventure, and parts of them still survive in our tome of ever-evolving house rules. Lords of Olympus is a superior gaming product, and I'm looking forward to experimenting with it. For those who are happy with their rule set and reluctant to stray, this is an unparalleled reference work for anyone wishing to introduce Greek mythology into their campaign. I have the black and white edition, which is a beautiful 234-page oversized paperback. The colorful cover and internal art by Scott Hashbarger are evocative of the multidimensional but still very Greco-Roman setting and help maintain the mythic mood throughout the book. The editing and graphic design by Brett M. Bernstein further add to the artistry of Lords of Olympus. Thanks again, RPG Pundit. I enjoyed Lords of Olympus so much that I'm contemplating sending my Olympians on a side trip to India just to experience your Hours of Indra RPG. And I'll be exploring the Precious Intermedia catalog for at least the next hour or so after the show. And with that, we go to Tim Espy and Zach McAtee, plus a special guest for tonight. Greetings and welcome, gentlemen. How are you?
Greetings. Hello. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Doing well, yourself?
Great. I'm looking forward to finally sharing the artifact story tonight.
Yeah, it's been a long time in the making.
Yes, it has, but it is here. I'll be reading my own chapter plus, I believe, the epilogue. I got the entire document on my computer, and I'm waiting for your clue, Zach.
Hey, so
I'm sorry, Tim.
Yep. Right. Yeah, so I've been excited to hear where it went, and I get to read one of the acts from it. So,
oh, awesome!
I'll be prepared when that comes.
And who is our guest for today?
My friend Kyle, who wrote the beginning portion of Artifact, and Kyle, can you hear us okay?
I can hear you. Yes.
Welcome, Kyle.
Yeah, I guess I'm the special guest.
Yes, you are. Zach, why don't you give us an introduction, and then Kyle will read his part, I'll go to mine, and then the story will unfold.
Okay. So Artifact is a collaborative storytelling RPG of sorts that involves people passing around a round-robin story. In this story, as opposed to writing about great heroes and people, you are instead writing about the history of a sentient magic object from its point of view. It will pass hands and fall down the ages to different people across time before eventually falling into ruin and rust. And so, tonight we have the story of an enchanted shield from the world of Artifact.
Kyle, that's your cue.
All right, that's my cue.
Yes.
Well, let me begin then. My eldest memories are of forge and fire and fane and dancing, rhythmic blow of bellows to set the time, the harsh clatter of tongs, a partner spinning me this way and that, melodic drum of hammer beating strong on anvil, rising, falling, building to an inexorable crescendo, then the soothing rush of quench, to mark the close of one hymn and a short rest before the next. An altar formed to bear a bed of coal, sustaining passion, ecstasy, and flame, upon whose blackened face my sacrifice transpired, prominently stands at the heart of holy shrine, a place of paradise for smith and shield alike. Beneath the moon and stars, the frigid wind exhumes a floor of polished stone and carries in the strain of brash voices replete through bazaars below. A maiden's lozenge, giant hands with grace and skill produced, the lady's mark adorns my face. A single valley lily sprouts upon a field of gray. Along my edge run runes of power, charm, and strength, redoubt for those in need, and safety near for those who hold my favor. Fanfare ushers forth my coming. With cheer, all who see me born rejoice, revel, and take heart. Salvation comes.
That was very inspiring, by the way. So thank you for writing that. And that leads into what I wrote. Part two. Their dance feeds me, revitalizes me, as do their many offerings. I now have a name and a purpose. There are rituals and observances, priests and priestesses. I have awoken and my mind is clear. In between their celebratory events and ceremonies, I sleep, reliving my memories and wearing the content of their many songs and stories into my greater legend. Earth's blessing I am, my strength deceptively represented by a delicate flower, a flower that blossoms against all odds in the frozen north. Though an artifact of legend, I am not the original shield, which was destroyed in the Troll Wars, where Borea the Bold single-handedly kept the mountain trolls and their frost giant allies at bay at Steno Pass, until other Hyperborean warriors arrived and this day was won. Hyperborea survived, rejoiced, and remembered. My current vessel is new, as will be the incarnation of my wielder. I await the hero, the one who is expected in times of crisis, the one who returns. Thus far, none of the revelers, nor any of the pretenders who've claimed to be the one, have resonated with my forger's intent, my people's need, or the many tales that have been told. I rejected them, giving signs my people can understand. The pretenders I cursed for their hubris. That I hate pretenders. It is past midnight. I feed, absorbing the tribe's residual adoration and high expectations, reflecting back hope and strengthening tribal bonds as they dream. Suddenly, my reverie is broken. An old man stands before me. He is ancient but unbent, proud and centered. You're our pretender, he states and pulls back his cloak with a flourish. Around his neck is a piece of metal, a barbaric talisman on the leather cord. I recognize them at once. He is the folk hero Borea the Bold, not a new iteration, but the real thing. And around his neck is what little remains of his legendary shield, Earth's Blessing. I know fear and then naked terror, followed by a keen sense of loss. And yet, I surrender and allow the essence of the original artifact to enter and blend with my own. I lose my false self and I find my true self. I am Earth's Blessing. I am whole and my memories are complete. With Borea as a young warrior woman, his protege, she lifts me from my display and I sing in her presence. My song awakens the tribe and they marvel at the miracle. My glow dispels the night and it is bright as day. I am that which I am and will soon be one with my wielder. The cycle begins anew.
Part three was written by Jamie, who could not join us tonight to read it, so I will be reading it in her stead. Oh. She carries me far away from where we first met. She, the woman I have come to know, is Griselda the Gifted, descendant of the once great leader Soteria the Savior. As we travel, she tells me the story of her people, the Glycarians, and how they were slaughtered and enslaved by the Eurybians, a race of men that behaved more like beasts than man. In their thirst for power and destruction, they eliminated all those who would have inherited the Glycarian throne, with the exception of Griselda. She is young, she tells me, but strong, and has been rescuing her people nightly by their captors, assembling an army of men and women who are ready to fight to win back their home. She is glad to have me by her side, for now is the time to destroy them for good. And Griselda is strong, and I am strong, and together we are unstoppable. I am her protector, and I save her life again and again as she further inspires mine. This place by her side is where I have always been meant to be. Together we are drenched in blood and filth, and we kill many and watch many be killed. Her screams echo within me for 3 days and 3 nights as we combat the Eurybians. I find they are not as strong or imposing as Griselda has made them out to be, for we have slaughtered many, and we are victorious. I watch for many days as Griselda and her people rebuild Glycaria. The Glycarians are a very determined people, and I am proud to be at their side. Griselda builds me a shrine in her northmost tower, where I am displayed for only short periods of time, for she cannot stand to have me far away from her for too long. She is the most courageous and passionate guardian I have ever had. Our bond is strong, our spirits tethered. I am her silent advisor and faithful companion, and we have many adventures together for many years. And while I feel more invincible the longer she stays by my side, time is not lost on Griselda. Her body withers, and our adventures turn to watching the sun rise from the castle, an evening spent by the fire. I am content to just be near her, as I am here to be whatever she needs me to be. One day she places me in my shrine, in my northmost tower, and smiles delicately at me. I can tell something is wrong, but she says nothing. As she leaves, I feel shattered. How long will she be gone? Days turn to weeks. Weeks turn to years. How long are we to be parted? Surely she did not mean to leave me here for so long. I have learned of every detail within my tower, every crack in every cobblestone. The dirt and grime of time soils me. I do not look as grand as I did in our days of adventuring. This is not where I belong. I am Earth's Blessing, I am not meant to be hung on a wall for the rest of eternity. I am meant to be by Griselda's side, always and forever. And now I will be, I am told, as a man enters my tower and lifts me from the wall. For Griselda has died. Her age and illness finally caught up to her. My Griselda has died. I am carried to her side. My spirit floats aimlessly without hers bound to it. Together, we are brought to the place where the dead lay, and we are meant to be laid together. And I am happy to be at her side, as I am here to be whatever she needs me to be. We are covered with the earth, Griselda and Earth's blessing laid to rest through the ages. Years go by, 3, 7, 10, but I barely notice. Time cannot change that I am her partner in life and in death, and I will never love another again.
Wow.
Which leads into my part 4, titled A Time of Glory, and I believe it was written by Donald.
Pyro,
the darkness gives way to a flickering light. Yes, Pyro Azer, Donald.
Okay.
The darkness gives way to a flickering light. At first, I can only see faint glimmers of it, but then as the earth is wrenched away from my resting place, an oil lamp appears in the darkness of the night. A rough man, masked and adorned in ragged, dark clothes, reaches down and pulls me up. He stares at me with beady, gray eyes barely visible in the lamplight. Together, we run off into the night. I see now a small hideout carved deep below the city. The man who has taken me is counting his riches. He sells most objects he collects to a shadowy figure, but holds on to me. From the conversations, I can hear him referred to as Arenzio. Together, we carve a path of blood through the underside of the city. Together, Arenzio and I are able to force away the people who would see an end to our nightly adventures. The hideout expands to a large chamber. The space is packed with people, all of whom referred to my keeper as boss. The air is thick with noise and tobacco smoke. Drink flows, gambling is ever-present, and violence is encouraged by all. At first, the hideout contains dozens of people, but as the blood spilled on me increases, that number becomes hundreds. An empire has been carved out with my aid, but I cannot feel triumphant. I hate my wielder. Arenzio is a callous and cruel man. He steals from anyone he can and sows ruination in his wake. I have helped him kill hundreds. As his power grows with my help, so too has grown his pride, and with that, his callousness. No longer can I be proud of what I have built. For an innocent blood, there lies only shame. He is unworthy to wield Earth's blessing. In his lair, I make my move. I cannot bring back every life snuffed out unjustly, but I can put an end to this. With just a little more blood, this nightmare can end. When Lorenzo is challenged by one of his men, I make my move. As the other men swing, I let go of Lorenzo's arm. It doesn't take much, just a little room for the other man's blade. The room erupts into chaos. All that I have built begins to crumble before my eyes in a whirlwind of blood and noise. In commotion, I slip away. I am kicked, pushed, and then I am falling. Perhaps one day I will see the light again. Perhaps once more I can build something beautiful rather than terrible. Perhaps one day I can be proud again. Finally, once again, I am consumed by darkness, and so it will be for many years.
And wow. Part 5. The darkness has a bitter taste. So unlike my time spent buried with my beloved Griselda. After sentencing Arenzio to his death, I had fallen into one of the many underground chutes lining the repurposed sewer lair. I cannot count how many times I bounced off of the unforgiving rocks on my way down, but when it finally ended, I found myself adrift in a gentle stream. No light entered this dismal realm, and slowly over the years, I was dragged along the riverbed. The currents ceased to pull at me in time. Sand and soil adorned me. Earth's blessing returned home at last. I felt no life around me, knew not if I would ever feel the caress of the sun's rays once more. And so, I dreamt. Visions of all that I had seen and accomplished strobed through my dormant mind. Behind them, between them, pulsing like a heartbeat, was the ringing of hammer on my bone, shaping me and giving me life. In my imaginings, I found histories rewritten from what I knew. Griselda visiting me in the tower, feeling her life extinguish, she held me one last time. A child's hands lifted me from her casket to be born forth as an heirloom, an eternal reminder of her glory and love. No thought of thieves in their dens, no sprays of innocent blood curdling on my skin. I saw once more those who danced and sang in my honor, each of their faces a chorus of those I had helped to end. I do not know how long I lay in this wretched state. By the time I became aware of the world around me once more, I had already been found, excavated, and carried for several years. No hint of how I had been discovered, nor of what I may have been used to do, good or ill. This deep slumber disturbed me in ways I cannot express. Time's passage, a mere flicker of shadows upon my metal. A deep fear lit within me, a fear of what would happen the next time darkness would take hold of me. If I were never found again, would I ever wake? Coming back to the world was an arduous process, my senses blooming at a too slow rate. First among these was the touch of my new keeper. I slowly became able to feel not just her corded muscle, but her tumultuous spirit as well. Blood-stained, surely, but not in any way I had known before. This soul had been set upon their path by the horrors they endured, the loves they had lost. As my connection grew, I soon became used to the scent of herbs and the taste of meager scraps of food.
Hello, Zach.
I'm still here.
You're still here? Okay, Kyle, are you still here?
I also am still here, although I do think we lost Zach.
Yeah, I think we lost Zach. We'll wait for him to call back. Unfortunately, this happens a lot with the information age and all the new ways of communicating and interacting.
Yeah, nothing's perfect. I will say, though, just hearing this aloud, what we've read so far, has made quite a difference versus reading
right.
The finished product.
I agree.
And this is all new to me, so it's been exciting to listen to.
Yeah, and it's very well written, and the imagination that wove the tale together is very rich, and it seems like a narrative for one person. I think there's Zach.
Right, yeah.
Hi, Zach.
Sorry about that. I think I lost connection there.
That's okay. You can continue where you left off.
What was the last bit that was audible?
He found the new woman who was his master, and he started feeling the shield started feeling the world again.
Okay. When my eyes opened once more, it was to the sight of a dim campfire, warming a lone figure kneeling amongst the brush. Wrapped in such a dense mix of furs and hides as she was, I could not make out much of her, save her face. A lean, haunted expression, adorned with two eyes as rigid as steel. A pink, ragged set of scars lay like canyons amongst her features, unwanted gifts from some fell beast. She sat and stared into the embers and did not sleep until they had withered to ash. In the morn, with no tent or bedroll to pack, she began her nigh-constant march once more. We trudged our way through a dense jungle, and whatever creatures lived there seemed to know to stay away. I stretched my beam, tried to reach into my keeper's mind to see more of who they were. What brief glimpses I received of gore and death made me recoil in agony. My keeper's memories were a nightmare landscape, anathema to my touch. I felt myself nearly compelled back into the darkness of sleep as I recovered from my attempt. In the days I fought to stay conscious, what scant thoughts I had absorbed from my keeper flowed through me. A life once, a family, peace and pastoral solitude, surrounded by the beauties of nature large and small. All of it lost, dashed to pieces on the ground when the monsters had come. She stood back to back with her love, doing everything in their power to protect their kin. I was forced to relive the moment she saw her husband's jaw ripped from his face, forced to feel her terror and sorrow as she saw her babe crushed in a blood-slicked maw. When I managed to achieve full consciousness again, I found we were no longer in the jungle as before. I felt myself resting on a wooden table, heard the chatter of humans gathered together in camaraderie and joy. I found us inside of a great guild hall, overflowing with both ale and mirth. The walls covered with trophies won from uncountable hunts. Some of the creatures on these walls I could identify. Others seemed to match nothing I could dredge from my deep stores of memory. I had not realized just how sorely I missed the feel of joy and life all around me. The hunters danced and drank and sang all through the night, and I could feel my being coalesce with their energies. Amongst all of these dancing souls, one lay still and silent as the grave. My keeper sat on a stool but a few feet away from me, yet the distance between us felt infinite. The Sable, I heard some of the hunters call her, a scarred and skilled hunter with no known past, who had come to the guild a novice drenched in the cyan blood of some unknown beast. Unwilling or unable to speak, she devoted herself to the mastery of their arts with a resigned determination. I felt I could now plot the course of her life, see what steps lay between the wounded survivor and the stoic wanderer. Rather than let the loss of all she loved bury her, she instead used it to whet and hone herself into a weapon capable of keeping the monsters away from further innocence. Having experienced her haunting memories firsthand, I resonated with her drive and desire. This keeper's calling was not so grand as granting freedom to a kingdom's people, nor so extravagant as building an empire on blood and gold. She was herself a shield. The Sable bore me forth from the guild hall, and we traveled with the winds. Alone in the wilderness, she would track down any beast that crossed her path. In towns, she was commissioned to end threats to crop, cattle, and community. Each day I walked beside her, I felt my thoughts moving in tandem with her own, yet I still could not seem to make contact to reveal my sentience. Each night, when she slept, I found myself swept along to witness her nightmares, unable to offer any comfort or support. Our time together continued to grow as years fall past us like grains of sand. I came to know every fiber of her being. No simple lust for revenge burned in her chest. She had hunted and slain the beasts capable for her loss and disfigurement as soon as she had strength enough to crawl from the ruins of her home. The Sable was instead driven by one simple thought, one repeating mantra echoing throughout her entire being. Never again. To aid her, I turned away tooth and claw, blunted the might of horns, and halted immense forms in mid-charge. The people she walked amongst wondered at my capabilities, but not the Sable. Though she knew not that I was living, she had felt my own long-buried desire to protect and deemed me worthy. My bond with Griselda had been like two minds occupying the same space, coordinating, discussing, strategizing. With the Sable, there was no such bond. Instead, we were two separate souls forged for the same purpose. We did not speak. We did not plan. We simply acted, performing the purpose a shield is meant for. I spoke with the Sable, but once. In a small hamlet to the north, the people had become the prey of some mordant creature. Under the cover of moonless nights, it would tear down houses, barricades, and walls, leaving none alive in its wake. Local guards had been unable to so much as wound the monstrosity, and so the guild was called. Upon arriving, the Sable took a draught and slept through the day, that she may be awake while the night held sway. Once the hamlet had gone quiet underneath the Eveling's blanket, we took up a position atop a creaking windmill. Together, our senses probed the shadows, searching for any warning of the beast's arrival. The very second the first shriek rang out, the Sable had already grabbed onto one of the windmill's blades, using it to swing herself to a nearby thatched roof. We stormed across the village towards the source of the scream, now joined in its nighttime aria by a guttural snarl. I could smell the soil, blood, and musk dripping off of the beast as it demolished a cottage, lusting for human flesh. Before it was even fully in view, the Sable had slung me across her back, unsheathed her blades, and leapt into the chill sky. The beast's ears pricked up, and it began to turn, but too slowly. A solid blow reverberated through me as both of the sable's fangs lanced into matted fur and thick muscle. The discordant howl it let forth was like nothing I had heard before, and still lingers in my dreams. It bucked backwards with thick, cloven legs, sending the sable crashing into a nearby wagon. Thankfully, my place on her back absorbed most of the force of the collision, but I could already tell several of her bones were broken. She pushed herself shakily to her feet, undaunted in the face of such a terrifying assault. The abomination unfurled itself to its full height, easily twice the size of any of the nearby cottages. Its body was covered in gleaming white fur, each hair tipped in a vicious hook of ice. Thick hooves lie at the end of its rear legs, while its arms ended in a three-fingered hand that seemed more claw than skin. An elongated muzzle, drenched in blood, split open, revealing a seemingly endless row of teeth. Atop its caprine head were three gore-soaked horns, stabbing forward into the air above sickly arch eyes. The monster roared, spewing red saliva forth as it swung with an arm longer than the sable was tall. Despite her injuries, she rolled beneath its grasp and let alchemical flasks fly high. There was a crack as the glass flasks shattered, releasing a blinding burst of lightning. Before it could finish recoiling in shock, the sable had already launched hatchets at its icicle-laden hide, the sharpened blade sunken deep, but it was not enough. Blindly, the beast thrashed its taloned limbs in a frenzy. The sable was only just able to raise me in time to block the blow. As the creature's skin made contact with my metal, there was a crackle of brilliant light, and another bellow of pain split the sky. I had lain idle for too long buried beneath the earth, miserly hoarding my gifts. The sable soul had reignited a pale spark of pride in my being, and she reeled as she soaked in the unfettered might that I offered. No more innocents would die while I yet had power coursing through me. Taking advantage of the beast's distracted state, the sable charged forward, hefting me high above her head. Her legs coiled, sprung, and she launched towards the monster's face. I began to once more surge with lustrous light, and with a groan of effort, the sable slammed my pointed edge between the creature's foul jaws. The explosion of light ran from my control, sending all of us blasting apart. I lay smoking on the snow-covered ground, but inches from where the sable had been thrown to the earth. Blood ran down her face, and one of her eyes had been stricken entirely white from my burst. Dazed, she was unable to stand. The creature slowly unspooled itself from the wreckage of the ruined house, its face split open, charred and dripping. One of its arms had been bent backwards at an impossible angle, and the liquid that slowly congealed onto the ground from the wound pulsed. When it opened its mouth to roar, only a ragged, heaving whine issued forth. The horrid thing started to limp its way towards the sable, still shaken and slumped on the ground. I would not let her die like this, not after she had given so much of herself in the service of those in need. I reached out to her mind as I had before, trying to break her free of her stupor, but her mind was still a dense nest of ghosts, corroding my spirit like acid. The creature was but a scant few feet away. I could not allow this. I stopped reaching for her mind. This time I pushed. "Lift me, damn you!" I screamed into her mind. I saw the daze flee her eyes, and she braced me before her with all the strength lent in both of her arms. The beast threw itself forward, all of its weight driving its lethal horns straight towards the lily on my breast. This time I rode the wave of energy, refusing to lose control. This time I would save my keeper from all harm, no matter the cost. The glow streaming off of me pulled itself inwards, fitting to a single tight beam. As thunder splits forth the skies, my energy speared straight through the monster's head, rending it in twain. The creature fell to the ground in a lifeless heap. I found it difficult to think, to retain my focus. Something deep inside of me had been severed in a way that I could feel would never fade. I struggled to see her, the sable, to see if I had added another innocent's life to my tally. In that moment, half dead myself, if such a thing as me can die, the only thing I cared about was the keeper I had sworn to protect. What use is a shield if it cannot keep its bearer from harm? Had I failed her when she needed me most? The sable lay slumped, face down, in the snow and unmoving. The hamlet around us was coming awake in clamor, villagers rushing to see what had occurred. They gathered around the site of our battle, too hesitant to approach near the creature's body. I wanted to beg and plead for them to check if she yet lived, but I could tell I would never again be able to speak. They stood, whispering amongst themselves, too cowardly to aid their savior. Until a light cough amongst the wreckage of the cottage that the beast had torn down. Galvanized into action, most of the crowd began to search the wreckage for any survivors, while the few that were brave enough ran to the sable side. I could hear, why did it sound so distant, from the rubble that amazingly we had arrived in time, had stopped the beast before it could gorge on the family now being exhumed from the grave of their home. A few of the villagers lifted the sable, carrying her gently. I could see, so dimly, that breath still passed between her lips. I felt myself shudder, a release of the pent-up fears lurking within. Waiting for signs of life had been a tether I was unaware of, and as I saw her carried away for healing, I felt myself sundered in two. My two halves rung out like bells as they fell to the cobblestones. I felt the darkness wash in once more, but this time it was not quite so bitter. This time one might even call it sweet. I let myself drown into nothing once more. I woke some time later, unsure of where I was or how much had passed. All I could be sure of was the slow and steady motion of forward movement and the soft caress of silks bound across me tightly. My consciousness flowed like the tides. I existed in a constant state of flux for what felt like forever. Occasionally, I would hear the sounds of awed voices around me. It was through their questions that I was able to determine that I was being carried by none other than the sable, recuperated from our deadly confrontation. I listened as they asked for the truth of the tale. Did the creature actually breathe liquid flame? Could it be? Did her shield truly somehow throw itself between her and the beast at the last? No matter how ardent their inquiries, the sable offered no response and continued to move on. In time, I felt us come to a rest. The silks binding me tight were loosed, and I saw the sable's scarred face looking down at me, her expression unreadable. She laid my halves down, gently, into a small bed of earth. As she stood in silence, I recognized the small clearing she had taken me to. The remaining timbers of her home were still faintly visible, overgrown with grass over the years. As I soaked in the energies from the soil, I felt the graves on either side of me. The sable was laying me in a place of honor for my aid, the place closest to her heart. I could not ask for more. She plunged a shovel into the ground and paused before beginning to cover me. I could see the steel still behind her eyes, the shield she had forged herself into. If I could but speak, tell her what her unbroken spirit had meant to me. The moment passed, and she slowly laid me to rest. When it was done, she turned and began to leave this place, never to return. Her steps faltered at the edge of the clearing, and I could feel her glance back to where I was now entombed. "Thank you," she said in a hoarse and delicate voice. The sable let those words hang in the air for a moment that could not stretch long enough. All too soon, her path carried her forwards to wherever the defenseless cried out for alms. I never felt her soul again. The loam here was potent, watered as it had been in blood and tears. It was not long before I felt the seed beneath me begin to grow. As the tree rose towards the heavens, its roots swept me upwards with them. I was splintered, broken, and alone, but I was embraced within the loving bark of that tree. Like mortar, it flowed between my disparate halves, a forging this time of greenery, no painful blows or burning coals, And when I finally saw the sky once more, it had never looked quite so beautiful.
Wow. Standing ovation for that one.
Very good, yes.
And now part six, The End, by Scott Kachmar. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yep.
I think it's
I am broken.
Kachmar, yep.
Myself was shattered in the defense of my last keeper, leaving my form split in two. The last act of kindness from she who gave was given none was rest. The hands that forged my being so many keepers ago have long since turned to dust. Heat from an ancient forge returned to the earth from which it was coaxed. Keeper after keeper have long since met the fate destined for all. I am forgotten, hidden. Surely there were stories passed around the people. Origins of giants and runes. A pretender cast aside for the true hero. She who returned her people to glory. The shield with a conscience and distaste for the wicked. Blinding light to burn away the darkness from which any monster dared hide. But there are stories. Bedtime stories and street side entertainment. A play for a few coppers to pass the time between birth and death. They are not about Earth's blessing. Most tales do not even link one fabled shield to each other, as if this earth could be blessed with so many an aegis. I am the subject of fantasy and romanticization, but without any knowledge of my truth. I am blind. Sunlight was behind her when the last dirt covered my face. My lily was gently covered in cemetery soil, as if to seed a garden. Without a keeper remind me of the rapid heartbeat of mortality, and with neither dawn or dusk to meter out the days, I merely existed. If I dreamt or remained awake for those decades, I could not say. Faint shuffling of funeral processions, grieving descendants, and thrill-seeking adolescents would be the only company for my interment. I am rising. Enough of my past keepers remains that I should know what is happening, but my senses have been dulled by inactivity. I could not understand this rapid upward movement. There was no keeper lifting me from the ground, no tremor of earthquake, no rumble of landslide, yet I rose. For a few decades, I briefly wondered if madness was my fate. It was not until one spring that I squinted at the spring sunrise. Panic over having sight came later. I was too stricken by the warmth of sun's light. My halves were entombed in a healthy young oak, blooming in an abandoned cemetery. I am waking. Time was made more relevant again. Days could be tracked, along with seasons, storms, droughts, and flickers of humanity. Light and dark, cold to cool, to warm, to hot, to and back again. The halves of my body pulled apart while the oak grew. Xylem and phloem punched through my metal with ease. Nature made a fool of the hands of giants and men. Less of me remained with each season of the past, yet I was still here. I was still basking in the sunlight, stretching toward the grow and letting my leaves soak in their power. I was still drawing up water from the soil. My roots spread further past graves disintegrated their inhabitants decades ago. I am dying. This oak grew strong, stronger than its parents, stronger than some armor made by the most skilled of craftspeople. And I disintegrated into quarters, eighths, sixteenths, and further, there was less of me to be seen. Not that it would have been spotted by any creature since my burial. Inside the heartwood, mixed in the bark, coating the roots, is what I once was. If one were to fashion an axe capable of felling this ancient growth, they would burn every bit of wood and find no trace of the shield. I am growing. None dared to take an axe to my wood, though. The glimpses of people were rare, but I could remember them all. Long forgotten and long mulched were the dead at my roots. I stood among smaller oaks and shrubs, a copse of my new skin. I was the center of tranquil strolls and resting against on hot summer days. I was climbed upon by child and squirrel alike, fallen twigs used as sparring toys by the young or as kindling by the travelers. But never did one tree in my grove fall from human hands. The intent of all who came to my grove would never be of harm or malice. Calmness, contentment, and safety were given to all who visited. I am gone. No one knew the reason. No one could have even guessed. My grove dissolved the hatred of those who wandered into it. Malice and destruction melted as the thought of us crusaders would throw their swords into the river when passing through, vowing to never strike down a life again. Raiders would dismount, turning their mounts free, and take up vows of penance. As far my branches would stretch, as distant as my canopy could see, I would protect this spot of earth. Even as my final rest crept up on me, I knew my purpose would be fulfilled as long as the earth and sun blessed me with soil, rain, and light. It is the shield. No legend can know its true story. Folklore guesses right as often as they do wrong. The location is always just one village further than anyone has traveled, just one valley beyond the next. The mythical friend of a friend knows of it, but no one can be asked directly. It is out there. Be sure of it. An old forest with an ancient oak in the middle. There, the cruelties of life are suspended. A peace is granted to those in need, serenity to those deserving, and protection for all. Wow. That is awesome. Thank you, Zach, for coordinating me there.
Yes.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun to put together.
So what is our next adventure, Zach?
We could, if there was interest, we could do another invocation of artifact, or we could look and see if there's a different sort of story we would like to tell.
I wouldn't mind doing either, so I guess we'll seek for another system and another story, and we'll vote on that and continue with artifact, and that'll be our next adventure together.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Tim, does that sound good to you?
Yes, absolutely. I could probably jump in on the next one now that I'm familiar with it.
And special guest, Kyle, do you want to continue with us?
Yeah, I would enjoy it again. I thought it was great.
We have, I think, a quarter of an hour left, a little less than a quarter of an hour. We'll go to Tim to find out what's new and exciting in the land of gaming, because now Level 1 Games has everything that we wanted it.
The store has been super crazy as usual, which is great. Finally got a couple days off too last week, which was nice. Me and Zach and a couple other friends got to go out and do a couple things. But the stuff at the store has been super crazy. We've been doing tournaments and stuff again, like I've mentioned, and those have been super popular. And everything's been going real well, getting some new board games in, and I've been getting some puzzles and stuff too, actually, because I secretly love puzzles because me and my parents used to do it all the time. So we got a Godzilla one in there right now. That's really cool, actually.
Awesome. And any new Magic sets we should know about, or Pokemon sets?
Actually, there was a new Magic set that just came out a couple weeks ago that is D&D themed again, actually. So we went back to Baldur's Gate like we did last year, I believe it was. So this was another continuation of some Baldur's Gate stuff with some cool dungeon mechanics again, and some pretty cool dragons and stuff that everybody's going crazy about. So they nailed the theming again with the whole D&D theme. So they did a pretty good job.
Oh, very awesome, and that is exciting news. I don't know why they waited that long to weave it together with D&D, but I'm glad they're doing it more and more, because it's a different way of approaching the game and different mechanics, but you can weave it into your campaign a lot easier.
Yeah, no, it's surprising that it took this long, but now they've had two come out and within a year of one another, so they did some pretty cool stuff. And they're also bringing the whole Warhammer 40K series. They're doing stuff with them as well coming up in the next couple months. It'll be some pre-made decks that are all Warhammer 40K stuff.
Magic decks?
So it should be pretty interesting. They're Magic decks, yep. And then with Pokemon, we've had a new set as well come out with a bunch of new cool cards. They keep Pokemon keeps nailing it with the stuff they're coming out with, and the art and the new cards they're coming out with. So they're doing a real good job as well.
I'm looking forward next time I'm in the area to checking all of this out. I was also thinking of things to do with my DVD credits from there.
Yep. You got a decent amount there. So
I'm thinking of possibilities so I get them out of your hair. This way you don't have to keep track of them anymore.
Yeah, no, they're all in the computer ready to go for you. So.
Thank you. And Zach, you're always exploring the fringes of gaming. Anything new and very unique that you found?
So a few months ago, I think towards the end of last year, I backed a Kickstarter called Be Like a Crow, which is a solo RPG. It's a journaling RPG. So I received that last week, and I have started a playthrough. I'm liking it a lot, and I'm looking forward to being able to give you a full review once I finish my first playthrough.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And special guest, what is your favorite type of gaming, or what are your what type of games do you keep going back to?
What type of games do I keep going back to?
Are you RPGs, board games, card games, unique games from the fringes? What type of things do you like?
A little bit of everything, to be honest with you. I definitely do board games, although less often than I would like. I probably spend more time than anything else anymore playing RPGs. Tabletop RPGs specifically. I don't know if you guys have ever talked about it, but my goal in the near future is to run a game system called Clockwork Dominion, which came out several years ago. I've never had the chance to run. I've played a couple times at conventions, but I may have the opportunity to do that sometime in the near future. I might take advantage of that.
Well, if you do, you're invited back to share your impressions. Zach and I talked about doing a Dungeon Master show, so I just announced it, and we have to work out days of availability. And, of course, Tim, you're invited to play as with all of the adventures. It'll be about creating wondrous worlds, so using your creativity to put together exciting games, mostly RPGs, but not exclusively RPGs.
Yeah, that
sounds interesting.
Wonderful.
I can't wait to listen to it.
And what I was saying before, Kyle, was that we might be able to arrange something with the bachelor party, but I'll message you, and then we can figure out something.
Congratulations to whoever's getting married.
It's getting married at the end of the year.
Oh, awesome.
So I'm planning some stuff for the bachelor party and everything, so it should be a good time.
Awesome. You are a great organizer, and you are an expert at all sorts of gaming, so whatever you put together, I'm sure it'll be incredibly awesome.
That's the plan. We got some stuff brewing, so Zach doesn't have too much information, but it'll come to light in a little bit.
And you can add that to things that people can get at Level 1 Games once you pull a really successful party together.
Yeah, exactly.
So how can somebody enter the world of Level 1 Gaming and meet you face-to-face and explore all the wondrous worlds that you make accessible to people as a part of your life work, Tim?
So we're Level 1 Games. We're right on Route 23 in Pompton Plains. I'm there most days, so usually most of the time when people swing by, I'll be there. But you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram whenever we get new cool magic stuff and Pokemon stuff. And there should be some new D&D books coming out. Forget the name of it, but it's 13 or 14 different like single stories that'll be coming out in July coincide with the new magic set that came out. It's not fully tied together, but it's coming out around the same time. But yeah, like when we get cool stuff like that, we post it up on Facebook and Instagram, and If you have any questions, you can send us a message or give us a call. And stop by. Like I said, usually I'm there most of the time. So.
And it's always a pleasure to see you there when I'm in the area. So I am glad.
I appreciate it. I love when you stop by. It's always a great time.
And Zach, how can people enter your world?
Well, you can always add me on Facebook or send me an email at mrmunnin@gmail.com.
And Kyle, oh special guest, how can people enter your world or contact you?
Well, I have absolutely no social media.
Smoke
to be free.
So, I don't know that they can. contact Zach or Tim and ask for
me. Well, I wish you all the best at everything that you undertake. And thank you again. I missed last month. Too much time passed between our shows. I'm looking forward to working with all of you on a new show. And I'm looking forward to our next conversation, wherever it takes place.
Yes,
yeah,
great. Thank you so
much.
And hopefully you stop by the store soon when you get time and see all the new stuff that's been going on.
I will plan on that as soon as I possibly can. And thanks to everybody who tuned in tonight, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called and patiently waited in our queue, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we're going to close with Golden Bough by Virginia Ackley.
Of earth and chill.